Welcome to another episode of COVID Chronicles, a podcast by, for, and about people affiliated with Portland Mennonite Church in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum, and my guest is Katrina Miller. Welcome, Katrina. It's wonderful to have you with me.
Thank you, Gloria. It's great to be here.
And you've listened to a few of these, so you have some understanding that we begin at the beginning. And I think I know the answer to this, but are you a native Oregonian, or where did life start for you?
I am not a native Oregonian. I was born in Indianapolis, Indiana. My parents both attended Goshen College and met there, and then moved to Indianapolis a few years after that, which is where I was born and my sister was born. And then when I was 3 years old, my parents moved out here to Portland to be near my maternal grandparents who were living in the Albany, Lebanon area. So they wanted my sister and me to have access to our grandparents.
And so where did you actually move to here in Oregon?
We lived in Portland, in Southwest Portland, in a few different places. My dad would buy a place that needed a little TLC, and we would live in it while he was doing the fixing up, and then move to another place and do that. And we did that and lived in a series of houses until I was 7. And then my parents bought a farm in Oregon City. Actually, I think I was 8 when we moved to the farm. And I spent the rest of my growing up years on the farm in Oregon City.
Do you have any memories of life in Portland before you moved out to the farm? Is there anything that you can tell us about that part of your life?
Not very much. There are a couple of little memories I have of my cousins visiting and playing with them, but not a whole lot. We did attend Portland Mennonite, my family, when I was 3, 4, 5 years old. I'm not sure for how long that was, but I know that Kathy Harder and some others babysat me and my sister, and we're connected there.
So this farm that your parents bought, how big was it? Why did they want a farm? Talk a bit about that, a farm more or less, quote unquote, in the city.
It was actually not so much in the city. It was in an unincorporated Oregon City. But the part of the goal behind it was that they wanted to provide a safe space for my sister and I growing up, and a space to roam. So plenty of space for us to be active and moving, and then also participating in the work of the farm.
How many acres?
It was about 20 acres, plus we rented space from the two adjoining properties on either side. So altogether, at the point when we were farming, the largest number of acres was about 50 acres. And it was primarily vegetables. Well, it was all vegetables, and primarily squash. We started out early on with corn and tomatoes and cucumbers. We always had a small patch of cucumbers, but the tomatoes and corn are hard. Tomatoes are just hard to grow in Oregon commercially without a lot of other infrastructure. And corn, we did corn for a while, and then the corn earworm became more of a problem, and we didn't want to start spraying the corn, so discontinued the corn and had a lot. At one point, we had 14 different types of winter squash. We always had a big patch of zucchini that we would go out and pick every morning in 5-gallon buckets, fill those up.
Now, was this providing a full-time job for either your mother or father, or was this kind of a quote-unquote hobby farm? What was the purpose of it?
It was for providing full-time employment for my dad. Yeah, my mom worked at the Kaiser Sunnyside Hospital for probably most, if not all, of the time that we lived there.
She's a nurse.
She's a nurse, a hospital administrator. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you have any stories of life on the farm? Were you a willing participant? in all of these activities, or were there moments?
Yes. Oh, I have plenty of stories, but I really loved the farm. I'm still a farm girl at heart. The things that I didn't enjoy were the daily chores of doing irrigation work, but I loved doing the tractor work, preparing the fields and harvesting. Some of the tedious things were hoeing weeds. And yeah, I guess that was the biggest part. But I really enjoyed the tractor work and seeing things grow and bloom and produce fruit, and then seeing them get all packaged up and ready for market. I have this image of this box full of dark green, shiny zucchini packed up in a box and ready to go to market. And that's a fond memory.
And that's the perfect segue, because I was wondering, where did you actually sell these vegetables?
We started out early on selling them to a lot of thriftway stores and eventually Keno's, which no longer exists. But they were more independently owned grocery stores that had the capacity to decide who they wanted to purchase things from. So my dad would go to them and offer this fresh produce. And at the point when we were still growing tomatoes, he went to the stores and said, I have these vine ripened tomatoes that I'll sell to you for a penny less per pound than what you're getting from the wholesaler. And that was his way of getting in. And then he also promised that if you have any spoilage from these, we will replace the spoilage pound for pound. So that was a real in. And then over time, it expanded. We sold a lot of squash, winter squash and zucchini to Winco. They were actually very, very, very good to do business with. And also a lot of squash to Fred Meyer. And then we would also, there was a broker who would take what we had that was left over and distribute it to other stores in the area.
Was this considered organic farming at that point, or were you using pesticides and those kinds of things?
That's a great question. We were not certified organic. We liked to talk about ourselves as being essentially organic. We really didn't use chemicals, but we were not certified organic.
So in that regard, you were just a little bit ahead of the curve, so to speak, or the fad.
Yeah, I think we were. Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming that you also went to school. Did you go to public schools, or where did you go to school?
Yeah, so when I was a preschooler, we were living in Southwest Portland on Vermont Street, and there was a Montessori school just down the road. So my initial school experience was in a Montessori school. And then from first grade on, I was attended public schools. And when we moved to the farm, there was a small country school that had three classrooms, and there were two grades in each classroom. And that was a really great experience, by and large. And teachers that were more, just provided a lot of personal attention and smaller group sizes. There was a point at which there was a risk of it closing because they didn't have enough local students. And so they actually brought in some students from a little bit farther outside of the boundary to try to keep it open. And it closed the year after my sister finished up sixth grade there. And so that was in the Oregon City School District. And then I went through junior high school and high school through the Oregon City schools.
So I'm guessing that when you got into junior high and high school, that was quite a big change for you.
It was.
Tell me a little bit about what that was like for you. You'd been in this small kind of intimate setting.
Mm-hmm. I did not like junior high school. It was a rough transition. I think academically, it was a good experience for me and I got good grades, but the social aspects and the big great big school with, you know, several hundred students was, I remember that being kind of overwhelming.
As you were getting into high school and those upper grades, was there anything starting to come into focus for you in terms of what you might want to be doing with your life, or at least next steps?
No, not really. It was just always assumed that I would go to college. So there was no question about that. But in terms of a specific direction, I didn't really have any idea. And so I applied to, I'm not sure if I applied to more than one school. Now that I think about it, I think I just applied to George Fox, which was a college at that point, not university, and went there. So I was attending, we as a family were attending Reedwood Friends Church at that point. And so I had a lot of friends in the youth group who were going to be going to George Fox and attended church with several professors. So it was a really natural place for me to consider. So yeah.
So in high school, were you involved in any extracurricular activities of any kind?
Farming. So we lived out in the country was a good drive from the school, but extracurricular activities through the school were not a priority for my family. And I would say to some extent was discouraged for more focus on family trips and family stuff and work at home. I mean, during the summers.
As a family, during those growing up years, where did you go? Did you do some special kinds of things?
We did. So my dad really enjoyed car trips, road trips. So we as a family, starting when I was sometime probably later junior high school, early high school, we took a road trip at least once a year, probably sometimes a couple times a year. So like during the spring break or during winter break. I have a bunch of cousins in Ohio, aunts and uncles and cousins in Ohio. And I had not seen many of them since I was a very young child, since my parents had moved to Oregon. And when I was a sophomore in high school, we took a winter road trip, which I don't know is something I would take on now, but we did that to Ohio, where we visited family and friends from that point. Yeah.
I trust you got to see some real snow on that trip.
I think we did. Yes. Yeah.
So you go to George Fox, and at what point did you have to make a decision, and what was it, and how did you make it?
I had a hard time making a decision what I wanted to major in, and I didn't have to declare a major until getting ready to go into my junior year. And I think I took all the time that I could. But I remember really ultimately trying to decide between psychology or an English major, which at George Fox was called a writing and literature degree. And I ended up going with the writing and lit, which I think was really influenced by my dad, who had been a high school English teacher for many years in Indiana before I was born, and then in the couple of years before we moved to Oregon. And I don't regret that choice at all. I had some great professors. I really enjoyed reading literature, and yeah, that was a really engaging choice for me. I kind of joke that a writing and literature or English major prepares a person for everything and nothing in specific.
You're talking to a fellow English major.
So yeah,
that's exactly what I said. About. And those were my two choices too. I'm amazed at the parallel paths that our lives have taken.
Yeah.
And there's a few more connections we'll get to in a minute. So when you graduated, what did you then end up doing? Did you have an education degree? Had you done student teaching or anything like that? Or just
no.
straight?
No. So it really, truly was not a teaching degree. And I could have done journalism, but of all the classes that I took, the class on journalism was my least favorite. So I really didn't have a clear direction out of that. But I decided that I really loved the farm and the farm work. And I had never been able to work a full year through the farm cycle, because I would work during the summer and then I'd go to school and I would still do things in the afternoons after school, but I didn't get to do the big harvest season in the fall. So I decided I would take 1 year and work the entire farm season with my dad. And that 1 year turned into 7 years, and it was a really great experience. I progressively took on more and more responsibility, and by the end was really running the farm crew and kind of setting out the directions of what we were going to focus on each day and things like that.
So just to finish that piece up, what eventually happened to the farm?
So my dad told me that he would keep farming as long as I wanted to keep farming. But when I was ready to stop farming, he would retire. And so at some point, I knew I was getting ready to be done farming, but I knew that there was no going back if I decided to stop and then wanted to go back. So I decided to work one more year. So that was after about 6 years, and then I worked one more year. Really convinced me that it was time to let that go and move on to something else.
Do you remember what year that was? That was kind of your final year of farming?
I think it would have been 98 or 99. I think 99. Yeah.
At that point, did you know what was coming next, or was it again just a...
I had a sense of that I wanted to do some type of work with children. And that wasn't very focused for me, but I knew it was something to do with children. And I got an interim job working at Costco as a cart pusher and all around gopher for about 6 months, until then I got my first job working with children, first, you know, paid job working with children in a residential treatment center for boys who were between ages of 7 and 13 and were emotionally disturbed. So tough crowd, but I learned a lot.
And just bring us up to speed on where you are now career-wise.
Yeah. So I have continued to work with children and children with mental health and behavioral needs since that time, but it has taken a different shape over time. So now my population is the early childhood population from ages 0 to 5 and the people who care for them. So that's both parents and teachers, educators. And my job now is I'm an early childhood mental health consultant, and I'm assigned to a couple of different early childhood programs. One is a Head Start program, and then I have a couple of family child care providers that I consult to and provide a lot of training. And if there are concerns about a child, I can do an observation of the child with the parent's permission, provide recommendations and support to help the child be successful while they're young. And if there are challenges when they're young, to try to establish a trajectory, a different path that will help them get the supports they need now and help them be successful as they go on into school and the rest of life. It's work that's considered prevention work, so preventing future mental health and behavioral problems, which I love.
How has the pandemic affected how you do your work this year?
Yeah, I have never had a job where I've been in front of my computer all day, every day, until now. Because pre-pandemic, I would go out into preschool childcare classrooms in the mornings, and then in the afternoons, I'd go to the office, and I'd have planning meetings with coworkers and do some email and other work. But now I'm in front of my computer working from home. I'm not out in classrooms. I miss the kids. And it's harder to connect with the teachers. I'm able to connect with the administrators of the programs pretty fairly easily, but the teachers are harder to connect with simply because they are with the children. They are open, although it looks a little different for some of them. But it's gone better than I expected it to. I taught a balancing lessons stress management class for parents, 6-week class on Zoom this fall. And that was a first. I've never done a parent group on Zoom. And I was worried about how it would go in terms of relationship building and whether the group connection would be there. And it's certainly different on Zoom, but it really worked. And it was really satisfying, really enjoyable. It made me really grateful to be able to provide something that was really immensely helpful to the parents who participated.
Well, we need to get your connection to PMC, Portland Mennonite. So you said that your family had gone there for a while, and then the last we knew you were at Reedwood Friends. Mm-hmm. And I just have to quickly add that when we moved to Oregon in 1998, later that year, your sister, Kim, was working at the Reedwood Friends church office and wanting to leave to do something else. And that's when you and I think, first met. And I got hired and I worked at Reedwood Friends in the office for about 3 years. So another just fun connection that we have.
Yes.
So how did you end up at Portland Mennonite again?
So as a young adult, I attended Reedwood for a while, and then I attended West Hills Friends for a while, and then I was looking for a new community. And it was in May of 2001 that I decided to start coming to Portland Mennonite and see if that was going to be the right place for me to land. And it has been. PMC has been my home since then.
What was it that you discovered there that you maybe were looking for?
Well, one of the things was, so coming into Portland Mennonite, there were people immediately who knew me and knew my family and remembered me from when I was little. And there was an immediate sense of sort of family or coming home that I experienced in that, in addition to just really connecting my sister and I, when we were growing up and attending the Quaker church. We were never members of the Quaker church. We just attended. But my sister and I would call ourselves Quakenite, combination of Quaker and Mennonite. And when I came back to Portland Mennonite, then ever since then, I've just called myself a Mennonite. So my identity really is around being a Mennonite. So I think the community, the theology, the community, the tradition, all have been really important, really meaningful.
And that brings us to another role that you took on a year or so ago. I'm not quite sure how long ago, but we have something at Portland Mennonite called SMMS, and I'll let you explain what that is and your current role.
Yes, SMMS is Sunnyside Mennonite Montessori School. The Hawthorne neighborhood where the church is located is actually called the Sunnyside neighborhood, which is where that word comes from. The school was started over 40 years ago, I think about 42 years ago, by a group of parents from Portland Mennonite who wanted to provide a preschool experience, a high quality preschool experience for their own children, but also for children in the neighborhood. It was really seen as a ministry to the community to provide a low cost, but high quality preschool experience. It started out as a preschool, and it was a few years in, but not very many years in, until it became a Montessori preschool. And it has maintained that Montessori history then probably 40 out of 42 of the years. And my role is I'm the board chair. I was invited to consider it by your husband, Harold. We're in a small group together, and that's what happens sometimes when people know you very well.
Indeed. And he was very wise in that invitation, I might add, but I'm sure everyone agrees. So what have been some of the challenges of running a preschool during pandemic?
What hasn't been a challenge? It's really been quite a roller coaster ride this last year. So in the fall of 2019, we were finishing a renovation of the basement space where the school meets. And so we were delayed in starting, and we also had hired new teaching staff. So we were finishing that up. We got that finally all wrapped up well into the late fall, early winter, and had a few quote unquote normal months, and then suddenly found ourselves needing to shut down. And we, of course, had no threshold or no, that's not quite the right word. We had no way of monitoring what was safe. There was no precedent for it of when should we close? What does that mean? But we ultimately followed what the area schools were doing and transitioned to a distance learning model, which was on Zoom. And last spring was harder in terms of keeping the children engaged and things like that. But over the summer, our teacher, Danae, did a lot of planning and brought a lot of creativity to designing a distance learning program for this year that is much more hands-on. The children are very engaged. So when they're together on Zoom in the morning for half an hour, and then they have a Zoom lunch together. And up until a certain point, when things got, COVID cases went up even more, they were meeting at the park on Fridays for a short in-person get-together. That when they're on the screen together, they're doing things. Danae puts together at-home activity bags that have materials that she will use for specific lessons during those. So I have only been able to sit in on a few, but they're absolutely amazing to watch, to see how much the children are engaged and just really truly enjoying being there, even though distance learning is just not really appropriate. It's not for young children, just developmentally, they're not ready for it. But Danae succeeded in creating a model that really works.
That's wonderful that you've been able to do that. And I'm sure that you and everybody else involved in all of this, we just can't wait for things to get back to some semblance of normal.
That's very true.
And I hadn't realized that you went to a Montessori school, so this just brings it full circle for you. And I just think that's really cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Katrina, I'm sure there are many, many more stories, but I would just like to thank you so much for taking the time to share some of your life with us.
Yeah, thank you, Gloria. This has been great.
And thank you for joining us for this episode of COVID Chronicles. If something you heard raised questions or you discovered a connection, take the opportunity to reach out and continue the conversation. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum. Until next time, stay well and keep the faith.